Colombia is a country of remarkable beauty. It is also a nation with an abundance of natural resources, from oil and gold to fertile agricultural land and spectacular coastlines. Resources that have made it a favorite of the United States and multinational corporations. But Colombia is also a country in perpetual conflict. Its government has been at war with the leftist guerrilla movement FARC for over 40 years. Drug cartels and the right-wing paramilitary groups they have spawned have terrorized rural communities for decades. The violence has led to the forced disappearance of 50,000 Colombians and the displacement of millions more. Violence that is due in no small part to billions of dollars in U.S. military aid, aid that has flowed into the country over the past decade. Founded by Spain in the early 1500s, the port of Cartagena's old walled city is now home to quaint shops and restaurants, and nothing along its narrow streets would suggest its history of trade and controversy. In the early years, Cartagena was a major player in the shipping of gold, silver, and other resources to Europe. It would also become one of the major destinations for those bringing slaves to the New World. Though many would be sold and shipped to American colonies, many were kept in Colombia to work on plantations. The descendants of these slaves now account for 25% of the country's population, but they are marginalized politically and socially, despite their numbers. Their ancestors arrived as slaves, a stigma Afro-Colombians have never been able to shed, and one that has made them one of the most vulnerable segments of the society.
Mientras en Estados Unidos, después de la ley de abolición de la institución de la esclavitud, se impuso el apartheid, la segregación racial violenta, en América Latina, después de las leyes de abolición legal de la institución de la esclavitud, no hubo cambios. La gente negra siguió pensando como negro, como esclavo, viviendo como negro, trabajando como negro, llamándose negro y dejándose discriminar. La gente sigue votando por los bisnietos de los esclavizadores.
A mí me preocupa mucho que el gobierno, nuestro gobierno nacional, el Estado, ha estado a espaldas de la región pacífica. Y de hecho, eso se puede notar en ausencia de políticas públicas para fortalecer ese sector. Ustedes saben que en la época de esclavitud, los negros esclavos se escapaban, que son los cimarrones, y se iban a vivir a la zona más inhóspita para que no ser alcanzados por sus amos. Entre esas zonas estaba la zona del Pacífico, los palenques del Caribe, y de hecho, la zona más pobre es donde habitan los negros en Colombia, los afrodescendientes.
Colombia produced an estimated 680,000 barrels of oil per day in 2010, with most being exported to the United States, which consumes 20 million barrels of oil a day. Colombia is the United States' 10th largest oil provider. And according to the Oil and Gas Journal, It had 1.36 billion barrels of proven crude reserves in 2010, the fifth largest in South America. Following the 9/11 attacks, the United States attempted to lessen its dependence on oil from the Mideast and increased its imports from both North and South America. Three of its top providers are now from the region, with Canada and Mexico topping the list. But oil is not the only reason for Colombia's special relationship with the U.S. Its strategic location is another. It has coastline on the Pacific and Atlantic sides of South America and shares borders with Panama, Venezuela, Brazil, Ecuador, and Peru. Since early 2000, the United States has given Colombia over $8 billion in aid, making it the third largest recipient of U.S. foreign aid, with only Israel and Egypt receiving more. This aid has become known as Plan Colombia. Plan Colombia was originally touted as a means to help Colombia combat the leftist guerrilla movement known as the Revolutionary Armed Forces of Colombia, or FARC. The aid was also intended to assist Colombia in its fight against drug cartels and narco traffickers. Objectives that supporters say will bring stability to Colombia and is in the best interest of the United States. But critics contend that Plan Colombia is further to stabilize the country, and that the influx of weapons bought from Israel and the United States, with U.S. aid money, has led to greater violence in the rural areas and escalated the number of displaced Afro-Colombians. Critics also contend that the FARC and drug cartels are simply a diversion used to hide the United States' real motives, which are to protect its access to oil and the profits of American companies operating in the country.
Remontarse un poco en la historia, el tema del paramilitarismo en nuestro país, al igual que en otros países de América, está asociado a una política de Estado que hacía parte del conflicto existente hasta el año 1989-90, la Guerra Fría entre la Unión Soviética y Estados Unidos. Estos grupos de extrema derecha pues hacían parte de una estrategia geopolítica para enfrentar la insurgencia comunista de las guerrillas que recibían apoyo de la Unión Soviética y de Cuba.
Se la crea el gobierno de Estados Unidos, Inglaterra, Israel y por supuesto el establecimiento colombiano, que es el principal interesado en crear ese tipo de violencia. Entonces ellos crean los grupos paramilitares en Colombia, como los crearon en el continente, en el sur del continente, como los han creado en África, como los han creado en Asia, como los crearon en Centroamérica y les pusieron escuadrones de la muerte. De hecho, los expertos israelíes, por llamarlos así, que crearon los escuadrones de la muerte en Centroamérica, son los que en los 80 y los 90 se vienen para Colombia a crear los grupos paramilitares. Y esos grupos paramilitares, sencillamente lo que garantizan es que la violencia se genere en las áreas donde hay minería y energía. Entonces, donde se van a desarrollar proyectos de minería y energía, entonces llegan los grupos paramilitares. En los mapas que ustedes van a ver, van a mirar cómo donde hay petróleo, minería, de cualquier tipo de minería, gas, oleoductos, gasoductos, poliductos, ahí van a estar los grupos paramilitares, ejerciendo una fuerza que es una, llamémoslo así, que genera varias dinámicas. Una dinámica es que esa violencia garantiza que los congresistas elegidos en esas regiones sean congresistas parapolíticos, es decir, paramilitares, es decir, criminales de guerra, que cuando llegan al Congreso aprueban leyes que favorecen a los gobiernos de los países desarrollados y fundamentalmente a las compañías multinacionales de esos gobiernos.
The training ground for many of Colombia's most notorious soldiers and right-wing paramilitary members is located in the heartland of the United States. The Western Hemisphere Institute for Security Cooperation, known as WINSEC, is a military training program specifically for Latin American soldiers and is based at Fort Benning in the southern state of Georgia. Originally called the School of the Americas, The name was changed to WINSEC after it was widely reported in U.S. news outlets. The manuals used at the training facility instructed students on executions and torture. Since 1946, the school has trained over 64,000 soldiers from throughout Latin America in counterinsurgency techniques, sniper training, commando and psychological warfare, military intelligence, and interrogation tactics. Over 10,000 Colombians have graduated from the training facility and make up the largest percentage of current students.
WINSEC says that its mandate is promoting democracy, values, and respect. What do you say to that?
Well, let me just say I and many of us in our SOA Watch movement have been in the military, some of us for years, some of us in Vietnam, some returning back from Iraq and Afghanistan in our movement. One thing that we have not learned in the military is democracy. What we've also learned is that you do not teach democracy behind the barrel of a gun. This is a military base here. These thousands of soldiers, there have been over 65,000 soldiers from 19 countries of Latin America, Central America, coming here to be trained with U.S. taxpayer money. This is not a Peace Corps operation here. They're learning counterinsurgency, commando tactics. They are learning, really, the art of killing. This is what this is about, how to control a population. And this has nothing to do with human rights and democracy. This really is preparing soldiers of other countries to really help protect U.S. economic interest.
Over the past decade, School of the Americas Watch has monitored atrocities in Latin America and has linked a disturbingly large number of human rights violations to the School of the Americas. Colombian graduates have been accused of being members of paramilitary death squads, of torture, kidnapping, and participating in massacres. As a link between WINSEC graduates and atrocities became more widely known, the Pentagon ceased the releasing of graduates' names and now publishes only their country of origin. Colombia's right-wing paramilitary groups were originally formed as private armies by influential drug cartels. These forces were used to protect their interests from the FARC, who were kidnapping relatives of cartel members and holding them for ransom. But these private armies soon branched out and began extorting protection money from farmers and businesses, while also forming questionable ties to multinational corporations operating in the country. Actions that brought violence and terror to rural communities. The Colombian government has long been accused of allowing the paramilitary groups to operate with impunity. And in 2006, links between regional and national politicians and paramilitary death squads emerged. The ensuing scandal would become known as Parapolitic or Paragate. Over 60 politicians would ultimately be imprisoned for crimes ranging from criminal conspiracy to murder.
Tuve conocimiento de que el Bloque Central Bolívar fue uno de los auxiliadores o ayuda a cuidar el tubo, el oleoducto Caño Limón Coveña, porque era que la guerrilla rompía el tubo cada tres días, cada cuatro días. A medida que fue naciendo las autodefensas en Antioquia, aquí en los Santanderes, se fue como acabando esa voladura de oleoductos. En el Caquetá también se acabó, fue la tumba de puentes, porque en el Caquetá la guerrilla tumbaba puentes cada por donde pasaban las Fuerzas Armadas. Entonces, para que no pasaran las Fuerzas Armadas, entonces tumbaban un puente, para que no entrara la... Entonces, eso, pues así como cuidar cosas del Estado como tal, no. El que pagaba una vacuna se le cuidaba, el que no, no se le cuidaba nada, antes se le quitaba. Hasta donde yo tuve conocimiento, mucha gente, en la finca, toda finca tenía que pagar una vacuna.
No group has been harder hit by displacement than Colombia's Afro-Colombian and indigenous communities. who for centuries have resided in the country's remote mountains and along its Pacific coast. Areas now coveted by the government and multinational corporations. For those displaced by violence, there's little comfort and few options. They are forced into poor barrios on the outskirts of cities that would rather not have them. In the city of Turbo, near the Panama border, nearly 20% of the population is made up of displaced individuals. With little work and few public resources, they are forced to endure in substandard and often squalid conditions, eking out a living through menial day labor or as vendors within their own neighborhoods, selling fish, fruit, or other items on the street.
La razón principal que yo tuve que desplazarme acá a este municipio fue porque asesinaron a mi esposo, le mocharon la cabeza y los testículos. Y yo quedé en embarazo y a los 18 días nació mi última hija. Y me sentí en esa obligación porque ya no podía estar allá. Y a los 18 días de haber nacido mi hija, después a los 6 meses me hicieron una cirugía, me sacaron medio pulmón y... Y bueno, ya no tengo razón, como para, no tengo ganas y por eso tengo que luchar para seguir adelante y eso fue lo que me hizo venir hasta acá. La problemática de este sector es el problema de vivienda. Problema de los servicios como el agua, porque nosotros aquí no tenemos servicio de agua. Aquí hay un pozo comunitario que es ese de allí y nosotros de ahí tenemos que coger agua para bañarnos, agua para lavar los platos y hasta para cocinar a veces. Esta es una de las problemáticas que más nos está afectando aquí en este sector. Y las viviendas, estas no son viviendas dignas para una familia. Entonces esto nos afecta mucho a nosotros. Y la idea es que en otros países sepan las condiciones en que nos encontramos nosotros. Más que todo, que quedaron muchas madres cabezas de familia igual que yo. Perdieron sus seres queridos, pero bueno, a nosotros nos están violando los derechos, nuestros derechos fuertemente acá y esta parte no la miran. Yo pienso, personalmente para mí no hay justicia, las cosas que nosotros hemos vivido, es bueno que la gente de otros países o que tengan conocimiento por la situación en la que nosotros estamos pasando. De todas maneras, muchas gracias. Es cosa que uno no la puede olvidar de un día para otro, pero de pronto encuentra gente que le dicen a uno, bueno, yo siento mucho lo que te pasó, pero que eso ya uno queda como marcado allí.
Bueno, CODES considera que Colombia constituye una de las crisis humanitarias más grandes del mundo. Sin embargo, hay más desplazados en países como Sudán. Lo que hemos dicho es que Colombia está en los primeros lugares de desplazamiento a nivel mundial. La polémica que se hizo con el gobierno es porque en algún momento se dijo que Colombia era el país con más desplazados y hay países que realmente tienen más desplazados, pero esta es una polémica un poco secundaria. Con los gobiernos siempre hemos tenido una discusión porque el sistema de información del Estado colombiano habla de 3.5 millones de personas desplazadas. Sin embargo, muchos estudios académicos y los estudios que adelantamos nosotros han llegado a la conclusión prácticamente de consenso de que existe un subregistro entre el 25 y el 30%. Y este subregistro se debe a que muchas personas desplazadas de antes del año 2000 no eran registradas por el sistema oficial o porque muchas personas no quieren aparecer en este registro por temor al manejo que se haga de su información, o porque muchas personas son rechazadas injustamente cuando acuden al Estado colombiano para reclamar un derecho. Hay muchas denuncias sobre el subregistro. Quiere decir que si hay un registro del 30%, la cifra de desplazados pasa de 4 millones de personas.
En 2007, U.S. President George W. Bush and Colombian President Álvaro Uribe began pushing for a U.S.-Colombia free trade agreement. The measure quickly passed in Colombia, but was held up in the U.S. Congress. Democrats opposed the measure overwhelmingly, pointing to Colombia's poor record on human rights. During his 2008 presidential campaign, then-Senator Barack Obama said he opposed ratification of the free trade agreement with Colombia, citing the large number of union activists and leaders who had been assassinated over the past decade. Despite this record, President Uribe defended the proposed free trade agreement, saying it would give certainty to investors and allow more corporations to operate in the country. He claimed this influx in investment would make it easier for the Colombian government to defeat the FARC and narco-trafficking operations.
To help businesses sell more products abroad, we set a goal of doubling our exports by 2014. Because the more we export, the more jobs we create here at home. Already our exports are up. Recently we signed agreements with India and China that will support more than 250,000 jobs here in the United States. And last month we finalized a trade agreement with South Korea that will support at least 70,000 American jobs. This agreement has unprecedented support from business and labor, Democrats and Republicans, and I ask this Congress to pass it as soon as possible. Now, before I took office, I made it clear that we would enforce our trade agreements and that I would only sign deals that keep faith with American workers and promote American jobs. That's what we did with Korea. And that's what I intend to do as we pursue agreements with Panama and Colombia and continue our Asia-Pacific and global trade talks.
Threats from the FARC and paramilitary groups are not the only factors forcing some Afro-Colombians off their land. For decades, government-backed megaprojects have been displacing families, and many fear the free trade agreement will lead to an onslaught of such ventures. Alsatia, a village made up of 65 families, is such a community. In 1985, they were forced to leave their land to make way for the Salvagina Dam, a hydroelectric megaproject in the Cauca region, a few hours' drive from Cali. At the time, they stood together as a community and were given land as compensation atop a mountain 30 miles away from the dam. Alsatia now faces the threat of displacement once more, this time from individuals they call the New People. The New People are narco-traffickers who have been forced to flee other areas as the result of eradication efforts and have moved onto land below them on the mountain. They have received offers to buy parts of their land but have refused to sell. They fear the attempts to acquire some of their acreage is just an opening salvo and that threats will follow. They have been forced off their land twice before, after being threatened by paramilitary groups. On each occasion, they were able to return after a period of time, but only after their homes had been looted, their livestock stolen, and their crops destroyed. The community also knows the New People would not have taken up residence without paramilitary or FARC protection in place, generating a fear that if they are forced to leave again, they will likely be unable to return.
Pues la verdad esa preocupación sí nos mantiene a diario, incluso yo especialmente tengo cuatro niñas aquí en la comunidad, hay muchos niños que en ese momentico estudian abajo en Brisas de Marilope, no sé si aquí el compañero les mostró el colegio, y pues en ocasiones les toca madrugar bastante. Otras veces, para evitarse las madrugadas, se van a quedar por allá donde los profesores, en un lugar más cercano, porque les da mucho temor Ya no es como antes, que se desplazaban a las 3 de la mañana y ellos como que no sentían nada. Ahorita sienten más temor que antes. Y la verdad sí nos preocupa que pues posiblemente nos tengamos que, o de pronto sí nos obliguen a volver a salir.
La verdad sí, es irónico porque creemos que el gobierno y las mismas compañías multinacionales no se habían dado cuenta, o sea, hace 60 años ingresa todo el tema del cultivo, del monocultivo de caña de azúcar. Y entonces toda la tierra plana hacen un barrido utilizando diferentes métodos, entre comillas, legales, pero para nosotros las comunidades ilegales, para despojarnos de la tierra plana. Y en ese sentido vemos que en estas partes de la montaña hay alguna opción de vida, pero hasta ahí no era de interés del gobierno estas tierras, porque supuestamente de pronto no existían unos estudios muy precisos de los minerales que existen en todos estos territorios. Pero a raíz de estudios que se han venido haciendo, el gobierno se ha dado cuenta que en todos esos territorios existe muchísimos minerales que generan, pues, entre comillas, riqueza para algunos de las familias de pudientes de ese país. Y eso ha hecho que hoy sea de gran interés para el gobierno y las multinacionales fijar la mirada en estos territorios con el único propósito de explotar los recursos que se encuentran. Pero nosotros ya sabemos que no hay para dónde coger, porque cuando nos quitaron la tierra plana, miramos la montaña, pero ya no tenemos más para dónde corrernos. Entonces toca acoger lo que ofrece el gobierno y lo que pasó con las 10.000 personas que salieron del embalse, que salimos del embalse, que hoy están en el distrito de Agua Blanca. Entonces también es una estrategia de cómo acabar con el campo y llevar a la gente nuevamente a la ciudad, con el propósito de consumir todos los servicios que estas mismas multinacionales venden en la ciudad. Los transportes masivos, el tema de servicios públicos, es decir, acá somos dueños del agua, pero si nos llevan a Cali, esa misma agua en Cali nos toca pagarla. Todo el tema de la compañías que producen los medicamentos. O sea, es una estrategia que está orientada precisamente a fortalecer todo el sistema capitalista. Y para el gobierno acá no somos útiles, ¿no? Uno, porque impedimos el desarrollo, impedimos que se exploten los recursos, y otro, porque no generamos impuestos, no consumimos todo lo que ellos ofrecen al mercado.
Alsatia is an example of the shift in thinking when it comes to what is valuable land in Colombia. Armed groups, traffickers, multinational corporations, and the Colombian government are all taking a fresh look at the country's natural resources, much of which lies beneath embattled rural villages who are trying to withstand the onslaught.
Pues realmente desconozco qué le dejen pues a la comunidad. Sí, sabemos de que al gobierno nacional, desde luego, es un negocio del Estado como tal, le deja grandes ganancias, pero en sí a la comunidad, pues lo que le deja, pues yo creo que absolutamente nada, porque le deja es un problema, sí, porque si bien puede generar algunos empleos para algunos en un momento dado, pero eso es insuficiente frente a la devastación que se hace y frente a los problemas sociales que se nos crea. Entonces, por lo tanto, realmente lo que le queda a la comunidad no es nada satisfactorio.
Villages along the Cauca River, just below the Salvagina Dam, are also facing a threat. Because the land they occupy is believed to contain billions of dollars in gold deposits, multinational mining companies and the Colombian government are eager to gain access to these areas and extract the gold. Locals have resisted this encroachment, and the result is whole communities have been warned by paramilitary groups to clear out or face death. For paramilitary units in the FARC, acquiring the land offers a variety of opportunities to make money by leasing the land to mining concerns and offers them a legitimate business transaction through which to launder drug money. Mining companies operating in the area employ a method known as open sky mining, a method that has caused serious ecological harm already. And locals fear that even a small foothold on the part of multinational mining companies will be a disaster for the region. They point to spots along the river where mining companies have already gained access and used the open sky method, which uses large machines to dig what are essentially pits. One farmer, who allowed a company to mine on his property, was paid $5,000 US. Over the course of a few weeks, the mining operation extracted over $150,000 worth of gold, then left the land in ruins. Residents fear the stagnant water that has pooled at the bottom of the pit will breed mosquitoes and disease. And the effects of this type of mining are felt long after the operation cease. Not far from this site sits a farm that was commandeered by the FARC for its own personal use a decade ago. The family who owned the land was eventually able to reclaim it, but only after large parts had been mined using the open sky method. What they are now left with are large tracts of unusable land, whose only real worth is the rocks they can collect and sell.
Pues, sabemos de que ella ya solicitó, pues, el permiso, ya solicitó, pues, la licencia y todo, ¿ya? Y sabemos de que a cualquier momento, si nosotros nos dormimos, pues, ellos se establecen y empiezan, pues, a hacer la explotación. Entonces, por lo tanto, pues, nosotros estamos a la vanguardia, precisamente, y ojalá, pues, no se dé eso, sino que antes, por el contrario, el gobierno suspenda o les quite el título a esta minero, a estas organizaciones, a estas multinacionales, y por el contrario, esos títulos, pues, sean otorgados precisamente a nuestras organizaciones de base de nuestra comunidad para que nosotros mismos, a través de ciertos proyectos que podamos adquirir ciertas maquinarias, pues también podamos explotar nuestros minerales.
When you present ideas like that in Colombia, you will be assassinated soon, or you have to go because they threat you and you have to leave. So how can the Afro-Colombian community or leaders implement a strategy, a vision for a nation where everybody can live, work, and support their family without fear?
Like much of South America, Colombia's economy is broken into two sectors, the formal and the informal. And the gap in wealth between the individuals operating in each system is staggering. According to a United Nations report on Colombia, the richest 10% of its population has a 46.1% share of its economy, while the bottom 10% shares only 1.1% of the country's wealth. Mega projects, such as the Salvagina Dam, foster an impression amongst the poor that the government is only interested in keeping foreign investors happy, particularly the United States. Nor has this been seen more clearly than the Buenaventura Port mega project.
Buenaventura es el principal puerto de Colombia, y es el principal puerto de Colombia porque estamos ubicado en la cuenca del Mar Pacífico. Como todos conocemos, esta cuenca alberga más del 52% de las economías mundiales. Tenemos al Asia, tenemos y en el Asia tenemos a China, India, Japón, y estos países pues son países muy importantes. Eso hace de Buenaventura importante para el país y a nivel general su localización en la cuenca del Pacífico. Yo sí siento que nuestro gobierno ha funcionado mucho como respondiendo a Washington o teniendo contento a Washington o complaciendo a Washington. Y muchas veces por mirar afuera ha dejado de mirar al interior de cómo nosotros nos sentimos con los resultados de esas relaciones. Por ejemplo, con el Plan Colombia. Y para mí es una posición difícil hablar de eso porque por el tipo de institución que yo lidero, yo tengo que moverme entre lo público y lo privado, por un lado. Y por otro lado, porque personalmente yo he trabajado con recursos de Plan Colombia. Yo trabajé en una operadora americana de la Embajada de los Estados Unidos, donde nosotros, pues con recursos de Plan Colombia, apoyamos proyectos en Tumaco en particular y en varios sectores de la costa del Pacífico. Es decir, me he beneficiado, digámoslo así, de los recursos, pero al gobierno nuestro a veces le importa más cómo capta esos recursos sin importar la consecuencia que puede tener la aplicación de esos recursos, como por ejemplo las fumigaciones. Las fumigaciones han sido nocivas para la comunidad y el gobierno pasado no se sentó a medir el impacto negativo que podía tener, sino que simplemente trajo empresas americanas coordinado con el gobierno americano, coordinado con Washington, y fumigaron muchos sectores con un impacto negativo inmenso, incalculable, sobre todo para nuestra región del Pacífico colombiano.
Under President Uribe, the U.S.-Colombia Free Trade Agreement was a priority. But as he left office last year, many politicians doubted its importance moving forward, citing other more pressing issues.
This is not an issue anymore. I think this trade agreement was, especially the one with the United States, was a huge issue for Uribe. But now, I don't know if because they know that it's not going to be easy in the States, or because they have realized that there are many issues that are much more important. I think the bilateral agreement with the U.S. has lost momentum. And besides that, the bilateral agreement with Europe created a mess with the small producers. I saw it. I mean, I think you have negotiated with human rights. I think what the government of Uribe wanted was to give anything that the Europeans wanted in order to have some approval about how things are in terms of human rights. So we had to pay a price, and the government had to pay a price.
Pienso que el en mi concepto personal, yo apoyé el Tratado de Libre Comercio en el Congreso, el Tratado de Libre Comercio con Estados Unidos. Soy de los colombianos que considera que el Tratado de Libre Comercio...
Well, I think this is a country that has a lot of opportunities, but it needs to do so many reforms, and it needs something that is very important. We need that the elite that has had so much power in Colombia, that hasn't lost anything, as it happened in Chile, as it had happened in Venezuela, this very rich group of people that had had always the power, they have to change. They have to be more sensitive toward inequality, to poverty, to the loss of opportunities. We cannot continue having all this modern Colombia, yeah, that is doing very well, with educated people, very hardworking people, and all this other Colombia that is equally intelligent, equally hardworking, that doesn't have opportunities. For me, that's the crucial issue. So you have to have an economic growth model that includes people. But we have to compete the rich. I have been talking to the poor for 30 years. I don't want to talk anymore to the poor. I want to talk to the rich. I want to talk to these entrepreneurs and tell them, we have to make a project for everybody. That's, for me, the crucial issue in Colombia.
In February of 2011, newly elected Colombian Vice President Garzón made a week-long trip to Washington, D.C. During a number of public speeches, and while lobbying lawmakers on Capitol Hill, Vice President Garzón touted newly passed human rights reforms and spoke of Colombia's intention to return land to displaced individuals. Plans that appear good on paper, but will be difficult, if not impossible, to carry out under current conditions.
En este propósito, hemos manifestado que en Colombia tenemos que ser más solidarios, más sensibles con las víctimas y más duros con los victimarios. Por muchos años, y hablo en plural, el Estado, los diferentes sectores de la sociedad civil, de todas las tendencias, los diferentes sectores políticos, de todas las tendencias, fuimos más flexibles, más condescendientes con los victimarios y a veces menos sensibles y menos solidarios con las víctimas. Incluso hemos dejado que en Colombia prospere la cultura que cuando se asesina a una persona, se atenta contra una persona, sospechamos más de la víctima que del victimario. La bendita manía colombiana de que algo de vida. Si ustedes me permiten, reitero aquí lo que he venido diciendo públicamente. A Estados Unidos le conviene enormemente la aprobación de este tratado. Nosotros ya tenemos una ruta definida, no nos vamos a salir de ella. Nosotros hemos dicho que tenemos una política de Estado en materia de promoción y respeto integral de los derechos humanos, incluyendo los derechos laborales y ambientales. No está supeditado a la firma de ningún tratado de libre comercio, ni con Estados Unidos, ni con la Unión Europea, ni con el Canadá, ni absolutamente con nadie. Es que estamos convencidos que por ese camino consolidamos a Colombia como un Estado moderno. Y cuando hablamos de un Estado moderno, hablamos de un Estado sólidamente en la democracia. Hace 3 años atrás, nuestro principal socio comercial era Estados Unidos. Hoy lo sigue siendo, pero disminuyendo exportaciones y disminuyendo sus importaciones. Y nuestro segundo socio comercial era Venezuela. Hoy es China.
China's emergence as a free trade partner and donor to Latin American countries has given the Colombian government the upper hand in the free trade debate, leaving the Obama White House only 2 choices: reverse course on the free trade agreement and support the bill's passage, or oppose the agreement and risk alienating the Colombian government.
Colombia has a special status for the United States and Latin America. And this special status makes our government look the other way on things that on any other government they would not tolerate. Why does it have the special status? Because it is the number one partner in the Andes. There's great fear that Venezuela's Hugo Chavez is somehow going to take over all of the southern part of Latin America, which is an unfounded fear. Secondly, it is seen as the major partner in the anti-narcotics efforts along with Mexico. And then also, it's what many people describe as the Uribe miracle. Under the Álvaro Uribe Vélez administration, the Colombian conflict changed. It was transformed from what was happening in the 1980s and 1990s of, you know, massive massacres, something about 100 or more massacres per year, very open conflict, to a more subtle conflict that still has tremendous consequences. The Uribe administration demobilized, supposedly, the paramilitaries, and also took on an incredibly hardline approach throughout most of the territories with the democratic security policies. All of these things were sold by Colombia to the United States, in particular our U.S. Congress, as major advances in the reduction of human rights indicators. The Colombian government sold to the U.S. that there was no more internal conflict, that the only remaining problems were terrorist issues, that were narco trafficking, and that displacement was going down, and that things were significantly improved. Some obstacles still remained, but they had finally conquered and managed to give a huge blow to the FARC. And for that, they just needed more money, more resources, political support, and, you know, they didn't say this, but looking the other way on some of the dirtiness of those hardline approaches. For us, people who've been following Colombia before, during, and after, we can say that, yes, the conflict changed and certain indicators went down, but other indicators went up. And the internal conflict is still there.
Good morning. I am very pleased to be here with Vice President Garzón of Colombia on his first visit to Washington. As President Obama said in his State of the Union address, we are committed to a successful conclusion and ratification of the U.S.-Colombia trade agreement. And I look forward to working with the Vice President and members of the Colombian government to bring that result about. I also commended the Vice President and the Santos administration for the progress that is being made on resolving long-term disputes having to do with displaced people in the country and reaching out to civil society to add their voices to a national conversation about human rights and labor rights.
On October 21, 2011, President Barack Obama signed the Colombia Free Trade Agreement, which passed through the U.S. Congress, despite the objections of labor organizations and human rights activists. Critics contend this will create even more problems for Colombia's poor rural areas and force even more families to flee to the barrio communities found in cities like Turbo, Cartagena, and Bogota. Critics also point to Colombia's recent provincial elections that were held in October of 2011, the same month that Obama signed the free trade agreement. In the run-up to these elections, 41 candidates were killed nationwide, a statistic that has left those already displaced and families fearing they could be next, with very little hope for the future.